Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Hi there. Ho there. It's me, Josh, your friend, with this week's edition of SYSK Selects. And for this week, I've selected How Zero Works, a surprisingly riveting episode about Zero. You know, Zero made famous by the phrase, you better lose that zero and get yourself a hero. Well, it turns out that Zero is pretty great in its own right. Just listen to this episode, okay? Enjoy.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. And this is a rare, unusual, mathematical episode of Stuff You Should Know.
Yes. And I'm just going to step out of the room, and I'll be back in, what, 25 minutes?
I knew you were going to do this. This is not going to be another yo-yo episode.
Oh, I just hate math. This was...
This is not math-heavy at all. It's about the history of zero. It's about the weirdness of zero.
My hero, Zero.
Exactly.
Till you came along, people counted on their fingers and toes. I posted that today on Facebook.
I don't know what that is.
The Schoolhouse Rock.
Oh, I don't remember that.
My hero, Zero.
I don't remember that one.
Till you came along,
keep
they counted on their fingers and toes. Yeah, it's basically, you would appreciate it because it sings what you wrote.
Oh, that's great.
In a much more basic way, but basically trying to teach kids how amazing Zero is and don't discount it as just... It's a number. It's not the absence of something.
Well, there's
although
a lot. There's a bunch to it. It's many, many things. It's a multifaceted number.
Not nil.
It's a multifaceted entity.
Zilch.
Well, null is German for zero. Did you know that?
Bupkis. Yeah.
Bupkis is, I believe, Spanish for zero.
Zilch.
Zilch is Cajun.
I did actually get a little etymology research. Originally, Sanskrit was sunya, which meant empty.
Mm-hmm.
Then later, Arabic was sephira, or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Then Italian was zaffiro, and then finally French gave us zero.
Right. And it wasn't, you know, we represent zero as something that looks confusingly like an O.
Yeah.
Right? That was the Europeans who did that. Prior to that, the Arabs, and I believe the Indians too, represented zero with a heavy dot.
You know where that might have come from?
Where?
Robert Kaplan's book, The Nothing That Is, A Natural History of Zero,
mm-hmm.
He speculates that the shape comes from the round depression left in the sand, a sand counting board, once you remove a stone from it.
Wow.
So the absence would be a round thing. That's what he thinks, he speculates.
But that wouldn't have been the Europeans. It was the Europeans that came up with that.
Well, no, but you said...
like a heavy dot.
Yeah, a heavy dot.
But a solid
could
dot.
Be the depression where a stone was in sand.
So. That's a good one. Hmm. Who was that?
Robert Kaplan.
Thanks, Mr. Kaplan. I guess I feel like we've kind of done a pretty good setup here, Chuck.
I think so, too.
We've talked about how zero is multifaceted, and we talked about the Arabs and the Indians, right?
Yeah.
And we have to go back even further to first... find when zero made itself known.
Should we get people. In the Wayback Machine?
Let's.
I think, let's blow the dust off of this thing.
Sorry.
Wow.
That was right at you.
You think this thing still works?
Let's find out. You ready?
Yeah. Hey, look at there.
Wow.
Lit up like a flux capacitor.
This is nice. We're back in ancient Sumer, and these baked clay tablets haven't even been baked yet. They're still wet. Look.
Wow.
J-O-S-H.
Was here. Cool. Yeah.
So, Chuck, if you'll look at this clay tablet, do you see these two diagonal lines?
Yeah, those little wedges?
Yeah. Those, my friend, represent nothing.
Really?
And the reason they're there is because around about this time, somebody figured out, they ran into a problem and when they were making some sort of tax record or grain inventory, that showing that basically writing out 3,000 lines for the 3,000 heads of cattle,
sure,
that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But let's say you have 3,000 heads of cattle, and all you have are the ways to represent 300 heads of cattle.
Yeah.
There's a big difference, right? There's an extra digit in there.
Yeah.
And that those two diagonal lines were used to represent one of those digits when there was not any digits there, but there's something to the left of it and something to the right of it.
That's right. And Kaplan also said that before that even, they just would leave a blank space sometimes before they even came up with the little wedges.
Right. So what this is all based on is basically our numerical system, where if you look at a string of numbers, right?
Yeah.
Starting from the right, you have the ones column, the tens column, the hundreds, the thousands, the ten thousands, the hundred thousands, and so on. Do you want me to keep going?
Ad infinitum.
Right.
Yes.
And in each of these columns, there may or may not be numbers present. So when there are numbers present, we have our friend zero to serve as what's considered a placeholder.
Yeah. It's very easy to just say, well, duh, now. But way back then, before there was a zero, we take it very much for granted now.
Yeah.
I think.
This is huge. This changed everything.
Changed everything.
All of a sudden now, because, we said there's a big difference between 3,000 head of cattle and 300 head of cattle, and by putting a zero there, right, saying this column is represented, there's just not any in here. You're not going to find the two cattle that should be in this.
Right.
That changed everything.
It changed everything. I bet there was frustrating before that.
Yeah.
You're like, if only there was something to put there.
Yeah.
And I guess when they
just like, just trust me, I have 3,000 right. cattle, okay?
And I guess when they left the blank space, that got confusing because they could have thought it was an error. So they figured we have to put something there so they know it's not just an oversight.
Right, exactly. Hence the diagonal lines.
Well, in this, I think before it even became that standardized, they used different things because they found a tablet from 700 BC and a dude used three little hooks to represent zero.
Well, that would have been after that, because the Sumerians were doing this like 5,000
really?
Years ago.
Oh, well, it's probably hard to get the word around.
Right.
You know.
Three hooks. What is this crud?
Yeah, exactly.
So the Sumerians are the first documented to come up or stumble upon zero as a placeholder.
Sure.
And then it was codified with the invention of the abacus, which uses, our numerical column system
right.
that we use today. Which was invented by the Babylonians about 300, 500 BC.
Wow.
Right?
Smart folks back then.
So we have zero as a placeholder. We have this understanding now that there's something out there, like we can represent nothingness.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until the 5th century AD in India where zero first comes about as a concept, as a number, which is equally groundbreaking.
Yeah, and this nothingness, we should point out, was not something that people were comfortable with back then.
True.
Oddly, now it seems odd, but to have something represent nothing made people very uncomfortable. It was associated with chaos and the great void and even the sign of the devil.
Yes, it was. Well, if you look at the Christian theology, the void, which is represented by zero or nothingness,
yeah,
was the state of the universe before the creation of man, humans.
Sure.
Sikhs feel the same way too, although I don't know how they felt about zero.
Oh, really?
But that was that's their conception as well. There was nothing. There's void. And then also void fits well with chaos, which is the Christian conception of hell.
Right.
Like no one's in charge.
Right.
So, yeah, it was avoided. I don't know. I went back and looked, Chuck, after I wrote this article. When we were studying today, I went back and looked, and I didn't find a lot of support for that.
I didn't either.
I did see that, like, during the Dark Ages, monks kind of were probably, they feared Zero.
Well, Kaplan mentioned it in his book, so.
But, I mean, it was out there, but there's no, well, these people did this. They
right.
killed this guy for saying the word Zero. There was nothing
right.
like that out there. I think more to the point, it was the Romans who just didn't use Zero. And the West was built by Rome. And that's, I think, where the shunning of Zero came from. Not necessarily from fear, but just because the Roman numeral system doesn't have Zero.
Yeah, I found where they flirted with it at first, with nulla, N-U-L-L-A,
uh-huh.
which they would represent with a little N, but it clearly didn't take.
No.
They said, we're not going to use it as zero.
No. Why would we ever need zero?
We don't need it as zero.
Right. Did they talk like that back then, too?
Yeah, like Vinny from Brooklyn?
Sure.
I think so.
Hey everybody, it's time you heard about Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own website. Whether it's an online course or custom merch, Squarespace has you covered.
That's right. Courses is a great program. You can start with a professional layout that fits your brand, upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor.
That's right. With Fluid Engine, which is a next-generation website design system, by the way, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity.
That's right. And don't forget the commerce side, because after that, you can charge a one-time fee or you can even sell a subscription.
Yeah. So turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. And right now, go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
So where are we? In India?
Yeah, we're in the 5th century AD in India, and a guy named Aryabhata is possibly the person who invented Zero.
Really?
Possibly.
Or discovered, as you like to say?
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you for correcting me with my own words.
I know. That's
that
weird.
A lot, doesn't it?
When they're your articles.
So it is pretty much universally accepted that Zero was created or discovered in India. And then it spread pretty quickly over to Islamic nations,
yeah.
Arab nations. And it was the Arabs who taught a guy named Fibonacci, Leonardo of Pisa, who was a great mathematician of the West, in the, I think, the 12th century or the 13th century.
You know, people are going to say, do the Fibonacci number.
Go ahead.
Well, no. People are going to ask for that podcast.
Oh, okay.
In fact, they've already been asking for that podcast.
Do you want to do that one?
Yeah.
You want to?
Maybe. Probably not.
Okay. Well, Fibonacci was the son of a customs officer in Algeria, Chuck.
Yes.
And he had Arabic tutors, and they said, hey, kid, we're going to teach you how to really do math. Because by this time, by the, I think the 1200s, or the 1100s, so the 12th century, the Arabs were very well versed in mathematics,
sure.
and the West was still just complete idiots. Fortunately, Fibonacci was over there getting tutored, and he figured out, wow, this is really, really important, and introduced our Arabic numeral system, which we use today, to the West through a book.
So you said he wrote a book. Did he write the book?
No, he wasn't the only one.
Okay.
Oh, okay, no, that's not true. For the West, yes, he wrote the book. And then other people wrote treatises on his book.
Okay, so he pretty much set the basis?
Yes.
Okay.
He was the fulcrum, the hinge between West and Middle East.
As Zero is a fulcrum.
Yes, it is.
Interesting.
So he was the one who introduced it to the West. But again, I mean, we say that because we're Western writers, Chuck, but it was very well established for hundreds of years by the time Fibonacci heard about Zero.
Yeah, and you also point out, interestingly, that simultaneously and completely independently of India, in Central America, the Maya were also beginning or already using Zero.
Yeah.
To mainly for their calendar, right?
Yeah, it was their it was the base of counting.
Which makes sense.
It totally makes sense, and it makes for a more accurate calendar, right?
Sure.
So, like, for Mayan calendars, like, the day of the month would be 0 day,
yeah.
Then 1 day, then 2 day, then 3 day, and so on.
How would you say that, though? Because you say first, second, third. How would you say?
They had different names for
sure.
The day, like Zul.
Oh, okay.
Would be Zul or, you know, Mon or something like that. It was like the rather than first, second, third. They didn't have numerals like that.
Right.
Like first, second, third, that's Arabic.
Right.
So to the Maya, it was like okay. Zul day.
Isn't that Ghostbusters?
I think so.
Okay.
But that was, what, Sumerian?
Oh, yeah.
Zul was Sumerian.
It's all coming together.
So that does make for a lot more accurate counting. And that's one of the big flaws in our calendar, the Gregorian calendar, is that there is no 0 year.
Well, and we all got that pointed out to us quite... Through the media, especially when the millennium turned, because there's no year zero. Our decades and our centuries and our millennia actually occur at the end of that year and not the beginning. Like when the clock struck midnight at 2000, we all went, "Yay, new millennium!"
Yeah,
not so.
And we still had a year left.
That's right.
Had we started counting from zero, then on January 1st, 2000, that would have been the start of the new millennium. But we started counting from 1, so 1 to 2,000 is 1,999 years rather than 2,000 years.
And there was one guy in every bar trying to point out to as many people as he could, do you realize it's not even true?
And he's like, why isn't anyone buying me drinks for this?
I know, exactly.
It's so crazy.
Why are they going to beat me up?
Yeah. I put a little notation in there because I have trouble wrapping my head around that sometimes. But the point is there's 10 single-digit numbers in the Arabic numerical system that we use.
Yes.
And it's 0 through 9.
Makes
total
sense.
Anything beyond that is in the tens column or above.
And thanks to 0, we have a 10 column.
Exactly. Take it, Chuck.
Western astronomers, they came up with a system, late 17th and early 18th century, that designated calendar year 1 BC as 0. And then basically anything above or below that would either be plus or minus, so BC or AD.
Right, so 2 AD would be minus 1, or no, 2 BC would be minus 1 BC.
Yes.
Since we're not living in AD, they just kind of screwed with the BC a little bit, so right now we're in plus 2012.
Yes, which also makes, I mean, it's not just calendars. I mean, 0 lies between negative 1 and 1. And serves as a fulcrum point for basically all numbering, positive and negative.
And that was Jacques Cassini who came up with that astronomical calendar.
Boy, those Italians were all up on this stuff, weren't they?
I took him to be French, but yeah,
was
I guess
he?
That is an Italian.
Well, Jacques, though.
Yeah, who maybe knows? He's... Maybe he's Northern Italian.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so he basically said, well, wait, why don't we just choose 1 year to be 0, and then we'll just basically make it, we'll make the calendar based on 0's rightful place of numbering, which is precisely between 1 and negative 1. There's a 0 there. It doesn't just go from negative 1 to 1.
Right.
0 is, like you said, the fulcrum of all numbers. It spreads out infinitely on either side.
So it's not positive, and it's not negative.
So it's the only number that is non-positive and non-negative, but it's neither a positive number nor a negative number. Wrap your head around that one.
Yeah. You college students sitting around here at midnight, just gaze up at the stars and try and figure that out.
Start counting. It's also an integer, a whole number, right?
Yes, and is very handy when it comes up to ratios and fractions, because a fraction can be written in a couple of ways, either with the one on top of the other or with a little decimal point.
Yes.
And without those zeros, you wouldn't be able to do that.
No, so this decimal system, basically it, you can look at it as anything to the right of the decimal.
Yes.
So the tens, the hundredths, the thousandths, right? The THs.
Tenths, hundredths, about, yes.
Thank you. Yeah, you're getting as bad as me, Chuck. those are all encapsulated in that zero that's up to positive one,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Because it's less than a whole one, but it's not so much that it's negative one.
Right.
It's encapsulated by that zero. So all of these ratios, all of the decimal system, gives us these incredibly precise numbers, whereas we can count in whole numbers to the right of zero in positive whole numbers. That just goes on and on and on and measures the vastness of the universe.
Right.
To go the other way, to go in this infinite decimal system that's encapsulated within zero, lets you measure the infinitesimal, right?
Yeah, so it's not like, oh, it's between 2 and 3.
Right. I mean, try making like high quality machine parts using whole numbers.
Yeah.
You can't.
No, it can't be done.
So there's all sorts of things that would have never taken place had zero not given rise to the decimal system.
Or everything would be really big.
Yeah.
You know, everything would be like twice as large.
Like the 10,000 year clock wouldn't even work. Remember, they were using like fractions of an inch that still wouldn't work.
That's true.
What else, Chuck?
Well, you point out very astutely some odd properties of zero.
Yeah.
And they are actually called the properties of zero because it's such a weird number that you have to have properties to explain it.
Exactly.
So the, which is the first one called, is the additive property of zero? Addition property?
Yeah.
Add zero to anything and you're going to get that same thing. That sounds very basic.
Same with subtracting.
Sure. Plus zero is five.
Right.
Five minus zero is five.
Right. It is very basic, but zero is the only number that doesn't affect another number when it's added or subtracted to it.
Which is important.
It is. Anytime a number is the only thing of its kind,
sure.
It's worth mentioning.
Like pi.
There's, which, by the way, wouldn't exist without zero in the decimal system.
Or any of those other numbers.
It wouldn't exist to us.
Yeah, true.
There's the additive inverse property of zero, where any numbers that add up to zero are additive inverses of one another. So negative 5 plus positive 5, or just 5,
mm-hmm.
as they call it in positive land,
yeah.
equals zero. So yep. negative 5 and 5 are additive inverses of one another.
Multiplying?
Mm-hmm.
From the time I think I learned in the second grade my multiplication tables, if I remember correctly. Ms. Anderson, Ms. Temple, thank you very much.
Very good, Chuck.
They taught me that if you multiply any number by zero, you're going to get zero. And as you point out, that multiplication is really just a quicker way of adding things.
It's like a shortcut.
Yeah, it's a shortcut. So the idea that a number can be added zero times or that zero can be added to itself.
That's the one I get the most.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense.
Like 5 times 0 doesn't mean 0 plus 0 plus 0 plus 0 plus 0. That doesn't mean anything. It's
right.
0.
Yeah.
Right?
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The, holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The, make a splash all summer kind of fun. The, I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun season. Kings Island is now open on weekends.
What about dividing by zero?
Let me ask you.
No, let me ask you.
This is the part where I was like, what?
Nobody understands this.
Okay.
Well, I don't feel very bad about this because no one really understands it. There's these other properties of zero that cover like additive, inverse, addition, subtraction, multiplication. There is no property that says why you can't divide by zero because it's so nonsensical.
Right.
It doesn't even exist. The concept of dividing by zero doesn't really actually exist except in, you know, the imagination of people.
I bet mathematicians have tried, though, like frustratingly tried.
You can't. There's nothing you can do. And they don't even fully understand why. But the best explanation that I saw was that it has to do kind of with the multiplication property, right?
Mm.
To where if you divide something, so like 6 divided by 2 equals 3. So if you can divide a number, the result of that number,
yeah,
by the divisor, so in this case 3 and 2 multiplied by one another should equal the dividend, which is 6.
Right.
Now, if you divide 6 by 0, right, it doesn't equal anything. It should equal 0 if you multiply it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to equal 2.
Right.
That's the best example I could come up with.
Yeah, that makes sense, though.
It shouldn't.
Like, well, I mean,
you're completely insane.
It makes sense that it doesn't make sense.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
And Stephen Wright had a joke. He said that black holes are where God tried to divide by 0. Wow, you like that one.
That's good. Stephen Wright. I still do his one bit sometimes when people get in the car with me. I say, hey, put your seatbelt on. I want to try something. And that was one of his jokes.
Nice.
He's like, just try that whenever someone gets in a car.
He's good.
Yeah.
And then also there's the property of zero exponent, which also doesn't make any sense, Chuck. There's you know, there's negative exponents, like numbers to the negative power.
Like 10 to the negative 5.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because of this, mathematically, it works out, but I don't understand it. numbers to the zero power equal 1. But that doesn't make any sense because zero multiplied by something should equal 0, not 1.
Yeah.
That's how it works out, though.
Hinky.
It's a magical, mysterious number.
My hero, zero.
And I ran across one other thing that I thought was pretty cool. The evidence of Islamic countries' comfort with zero as a concept,
right,
and Western countries' discomfort with it can be found still today on elevators. In countries where the Ottoman Turks or any other Islamic nation conquered and ruled for a while, you're still going to find evidence of a comfort with zero. Like in Hungary, if you look in Spain, I hear too, if you look on an elevator, the ground floor is zero, and any floor beneath that is a negative number.
Really?
Yeah.
Like the basement parking, like subterranean parking?
Like negative 1, negative 2.
Huh.
Isn't that cool? And apparently that's because of the presence of the Turks who were there for a while.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't have elevators then, but apparently like that's like you don't see a floor zero in the West.
No, you don't.
We just don't like zero that much.
Or a floor 13.
Right.
Although it is 13. We've had that talk before, I think.
We have.
Yeah. What do we have here? P1, P2 in our building?
Yeah.
That's so boring.
Definitely not negatives.
Let's say that from now on. Like, what level you parked on? I'm on negative 4.
Yeah. I will say that.
What?
I will say that right now. I'm on negative 3.
I'm on negative 2. I was here early.
Good going, Chuck.
Yeah.
And also, let's see. You can type 0. You got anything else? Or you're just happy to be done with this one?
No, this was actually really good.
I don't know about that.
0 is my hero. 3 is a magic number.
If you type in 0 in the search bar at howstuffworks.com, it will bring up this article, including a cool little story that we didn't get to about a gray parrot.
True.
And also, I highly encourage, if this even piqued your interest at all, I highly encourage you to read Zero in Four Dimensions, which is an article you can find online from 2002 by a guy named Hossein Arsham. And he explains in much greater depth and detail, like, Zero and what's so cool about it.
Or, if you want to really get into it, Robert Kaplan wrote a whole book on it. We should do one on 3.
All right.
I pitched that article
long time ago. I remember.
On 3.
Yep. I remember.
So those would be our 2 numbers. I'd have to write it, though, so I don't know if that'll ever happen.
Get to it. Okay. I wrote this so we could do this.
Well, you're more of a man than me.
I think at some point in the not-too-distant past, Chuck, I said search bar.
Yes.
So that means it's time for listener mail.
Indeed. I'm going to call this coffee including Coffee Song from a listener.
Okay.
This is from Ashley. Great work on the coffee podcast, gents. I could have saved my last 4 years of work at a cafe just by listening to y'all. Really, though, it was a splendid way to spend my days getting to know the locals in downtown Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, North America, Earth.
Have we entered the song yet? Because she rhymed a second ago.
No, that is not the song.
Okay.
That's coming.
That's great.
She's just a rhymer by nature, I think. While I can't say I'm a total coffee snob or expert, I do have a thought on the old why is Starbucks so bitter debate. I think that part of the taste comes from the number of beans used in the blend. For instance, at the cafe I used to run, we served both Milano coffee and then Umbria. I believe that each of these companies, plus the coffee I now drink called Intelligentsia, nice, contains a blend of beans, as many as 15 different kinds, to create that smooth balance I really love in my Americanos.
Is her last name Starbucks?
No. She's saying Starbucks doesn't use the blend.
Oh, gotcha.
So it's more bitter.
Gotcha.
Her name is Mom and Pop.
Gotcha.
Her last name. As far as I understand, Starbucks may use as few as 1 to 3 types of beans in their espresso blend. Like I said, I think this may be a part of the story, but not likely the whole story. On another note, since leaving the cafe, I now work with a group of software nerds who used to visit my cafe on a regular basis. So now I, too, get to go for coffee every day. It's one of the perks of the job, pun intended. We even have a little coffee song, and she recorded this and sent it to us. So we're going to play that right now.
Coffee, 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 coffee all day long. When I need some coffee, I sing the coffee song. Well, that's the G-rated version I learned.
So how about that, Josh?
That was something else.
Thank you, Ashley, for that.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
She says, as you can tell, we're a bit mad about our coffee drinking. It's the new smoke break for us.
What, where is that person from?
She didn't say. Oh, no, she did say. I'm sorry. Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
Oh, that's right. Earth. Yeah. That's right. Well, thank you very much for that. We appreciate you and your coworkers for making that song, for listening, for drinking coffee.
Indeed.
For caring. That's great.
Yeah.
If you have a song, Chuck, we get them from time to time, and I feel like we should be better about playing them.
Yes.
We want to hear it. You can, I guess, make it as like an MP3, MP4.
MP3 is good. Right, Jerry?
MP3. You can send it to us. You can tweet to us and tell us it's on the way at SYSK Podcast. You can go onto Facebook and tell us it's on the way at facebook.com/stuffyoushouldknow. And you can actually send it to us at stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The, holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The, make a splash all summer kind of fun. The, I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun season. Kings Island is now open on weekends.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.